Hello, rich girls. Welcome back to Old Money, the podcast to help you build the trust fund you wish you were born with. And this is the episode that's going to really do that. I am your host, Amber Evenson. And this episode today, I know without a shadow of a doubt, is going to be one of our pillar episodes. It's the perfect way to kick off 2026, and it's the perfect next step to everything that we've been talking about. I know what the most popular, most downloaded episodes have been in the past. You could probably guess them as well. Obviously, money is my boyfriend, building a relationship with money, getting comfortable with money. We've talked a ton about investing. Everybody wants to know how to grow their money. We've talked a ton about, and we've got a ton of downloads on our credit card points episodes because everybody wants to get more out of their money. And of course, we've talked about paying off debt, getting out of debt. Those have also been very highly downloaded episodes. And of course, as we've talked about, you guys love the lifestyle stuff, how to be a high value woman, how to be chic, all those things. But today's episode is moving the ball forward on this conversation in a very real way. A lot of what we've talked about on Old Money centers around personal finance, managing your spending, living below your means, tracking where your money goes, investing wisely, and also optimizing life, just enjoying it, traveling well, living well, making things systematic and easy. All that stuff is important. But real wealth, real meaningful wealth, building more, getting more every single year is not about how you manage your money. It's how you make more of it. And that's exactly what this episode is about. I am breaking down my 7 rules for earning money. And this, my loves, is the real cheat code to building wealth. If you have a friend that is starting a business, trying to do a side hustle, trying to advance in their career, this is an episode I want you to send to them. I have been working on this and pulling resources. This is not just from me. This is from all of my education. This is in 7 years of being an entrepreneur. This is referencing some of the most brilliant minds in the world of entrepreneurship and making money. This is the framework. You're going to want to bookmark this. You're going to want to share it. These are things people are not talking about. In fact, when I was doing research for this episode to pull some references from some of the people that I look up to most in entrepreneurship, when you Google or search for things like, what are the rules for earning money? The search return is going to give you personal finance tips. It's going to say things like, live below your means or don't get in debt. We know this. We've talked about it. These are very important principles, but personal finance is not the way to get wealthy. Earning more money is. Think about who the wealthiest people are in the world. They are running businesses. They are starting or founding companies. They are inventing things that make a massive impact on culture or on our lives. And this episode is about understanding how money actually moves, how money moves structurally, not motivationally. This is not about manifesting money. This is about, we live in a 3D world. We live in a capitalist society. We live in a place where business owners, real estate investors, people who are making an impact on the economy are rewarded. If you want to be rewarded and you want to be rewarded very well, this is the framework for making money. Personal finance is important no matter how much money you make, but the reason we want to master those skills when we're at the beginning of our careers or when we have less money on the table is because the stakes are lower. And if you want to really build that old money life, if you want to be the coastal grandmother in the cashmere sweater, or you want to be going to the opera in Gstaad, you want to be doing the crazy old money visions that you have in your brain, you are not going to save your way to that lifestyle. You cannot cut out enough lattes or clip enough coupons to make it to that lifestyle. You want to have the custom set of Rimowa luggage. You want to have the bags. You want to have the wardrobe. You want to have the travel. You want to have the help. You want to have the nannies and the night nurse. You want to have that big ass life. You have to move in a different way. And this is the episode where I'm really getting honest about what it takes. And I'm telling you, it's actually not that bad. It's actually not that bad. And also, this isn't just for entrepreneurs. If you're in a corporate role, if you're working for a small business, or you're self-employed or you're freelancing. There are different lanes people fall into, and I'm going to cover the nuances of earning more in all of those frameworks. And I think this is the perfect time to talk about this because it's the beginning of the new year. So motivation is high for one, but also if you're anything like me, you spent December flowing out your money plan. Where is my money getting spent? Where is it getting saved? Where is it getting invested? And how much is coming in? And if you've been in the same role or the same job or doing the same thing for a few years in a row, you might notice that things are getting more expensive and you have less money to spend. The reality is that the economy is going to move, inflation is going to continue to go up, housing is going to continue to be more expensive. And there's two things we could do about it. We can complain, we can cut back, or we can figure out how to out-earn how expensive things are getting. There was an old radio host that I used to listen to, a now disgraced radio host in Northern California. If you know anything about 98 Rock, Rob, Arnie, and Don, Rob is now completely disgraced, I'm pretty sure. That's a story for another day. However, he's always had this segment on the radio show called Dr. Rob, where people would write in for advice about a multitude of life issues, like I have a terrible mother-in-law, or my boss is doing this or that or whatever. And there's one that sticks out in my head that I think about all of the time. And it's, I mean, I listened to this radio show for 10 years, by the way. One of the reasons why I'm podcasting right now, because I was so enamored with this radio show and their banter and his approach. He was very common sense and very measured until about like 2020, and then things totally went off the rails. But I always appreciated his responses to things because there was this letter and somebody would write in. And again, I heard a variety of the similar type of letter over the years. I have found my dream home. I love where I live, but my neighbors suck. They're loud or they're disrespectful or they don't mow their lawn. What can I do to get them to comply with how I want them to be? Or how do I get them to quiet down? How do I get them to mow their lawn? Should I write them a nasty letter? Should I report them to the HOA? Like, what should I do? And the response was always very plain and simple. You cannot control what other people do. If you want to live in a place where you don't have that neighbor looking over your fence and being nosy, if you don't want to have that neighbor that plays their music so loud, the only thing you control is yourself. So go buy a house that's in the middle of nowhere where you have no neighbors. Get yourself a better job and go put it upon yourself to move out into a place where nobody can affect you. And isn't that an interesting approach? Because most of the advice that I hear out in the world is write them a nasty letter, do something to make them change, force them into compliance, make them bend to your will. And that's not the way the world works. You cannot control other people. You cannot control the environment that you live in. You cannot control the economy, who's the president. What are you going to do about it? Sit and complain? Or are you going to take it upon yourself to make your life different and move away? It might be the best home ever, but if you have a neighbor next door, is it that's bothering you? Is it really the best home ever? And are you going to take personal responsibility for that? Or are you going to just blame the other person? Now, this is a very overblown, oversimplified response to this. Of course, if your neighbors are being monsters and they're being unreasonable, like there's things that you can do to manage that. And the solution to life is not to go live in the middle of nowhere and not have community around you, okay? It's an illustrative analogy, if you will. But it ties back to this because when we talk about the struggles people are facing with the economy, with the administration, all the things that are going on in the larger geopolitical climate, we cannot control what happens. We cannot complain enough to change what happens. All that we can do is control what we do. And for me, my thesis on earning more money has always been the more money I have, the more resources I have, the more choices I have, the more opportunities I create for myself. I don't think there's anything that's more important to me than making sure that I can take care of me. For women, this is so important. This is the difference between being able to leave an abusive relationship and having to stay. This is the difference between taking time off of work and being able to put food on the table. This is about giving your children the best healthcare alternatives should they need them, giving yourself the best healthcare and wellness. This is about living in a safe space. This is about leaving a toxic job. This is about pursuing our creative potential. This is the core of our humanity, and having money makes these things available to us. earning power is about strategic expansion. This is not about hustle. This is not about deprivation and sacrifice. This is about earning more money so you can live life on your own terms. And again, I underscore, highlight, circle in red, for women, it's so important. I actually say now that my number one hobby is making money. I love making money and I love doing it through my art, my expression, the thing that I do, which is running my agency. And for me, it brings me so much satisfaction and joy and fulfillment and completion. I'm obsessed with it. But that used to not be the case. I used to have a steady paycheck that was coming in. I used to have health benefits through my employer and I used to always feel constricted. I wasn't able to do all the things that I wanted to do. I was in a job that wasn't the right, it wasn't aligned for me, honestly. It wasn't the right job for me with the right leadership and the things. It wasn't supportive of my health, of my freaking menstrual cycle. It just wasn't great. And when I left corporate, I went through a huge ego death because I had a very big title and a cushy paycheck. And I didn't know what I was going to do next. And if you actually go back and listen to the episode I did with Shannon Weinstein, she talks about how she left her job. And I talk about how I left my job. She left her job in a very systematic way where she was hustling on the side while she was still working in corporate. And she worked until she had enough revenue in her business to replace her income. I, on the other hand, saved as much money as I could, got a roommate, lived super lean because I was kind of hanging on by my fingernails at the job, and I quit with no plan. And then it was by the grace of God that my phone started ringing and people needed help building a social media presence or building a website, and I was able to do those things. And actually, I didn't know the skills then. I figured it out along the way, and I started serving people and doing things and built this business into what it is today. Two very different approaches. One of them's not right. One of them's not wrong. Mine was a little messy. We call it jumping out of the airplane without a parachute. But in doing that, I had this space in my life for the first time ever to explore and to learn. And a lot of what I'm sharing in this episode today is actually based on what I learned in between, in that liminal space when I left corporate and I wasn't really sure what I was doing next. And the first thing that I did when I left my corporate job was I went on a trip to Denver to this spiritual retreat and didn't get any fulfillment out of it and kind of had that whole bubble bursted right away, which was perfect. But I spent a lot of time in nature and I spent a lot of time reflecting. And then I went home and stayed with my mom. And what I was working on at that time was a personal development app called the Aligned app. And I won't go into the details of what that was, but in building this app, I kind of followed any path that I could find to see if I could get some help in getting it to take off. And in doing that, I learned so much. I was building and learning about the business world in real time. And there's a few things that I did. Number one, I started pitching to a lot of different grants and a lot of different pitch competitions, basically. I pitched to Uber, I pitched to FedEx, and I was in the process researching what should a pitch deck look like? How much of a MVP should I have? By the way, what's an MVP? I also went through startup school in San Diego live with a group called Focus, F-O-K-U-S. It was run by an incredible man named Curling Robinson. I love him so much. If you're in the startup world or Startup San Diego, you've probably seen him around. He's an incredible mentor. And this focus group was a weekly class that you would go to and learn the basics of building a startup. And then I also took independently startup school through Y Combinator. Y Combinator, I've talked about it before, one of the most prolific investment opportunities for early stage startup companies. And basically they put money into your business and then they help you grow the business to scale. It's in Silicon Valley. It's the creme de la creme of incubator programs. Well, they at the time had a free program online called Startup School where they'd put you through cohorts and they'd teach you all about running a startup. I don't run a startup today. I run a small business. It's very, very different. We can talk about that at a different time. But what I learned through Y Combinator, through Focus, through all of the pitches that I did, pursuing a project that ended up not going anywhere, by the way, which you can rebrand that as a failure if you want to, but I just decided to go with the horse that was winning the race, which was my agency that was actually bringing revenue into my bank account every single month. And so I put this app aside to pursue the agency. But my point is that this was better business school than I ever got in college. Doing it, building it, learning every single day, day in and day out and going to the courses, going to pitch, getting in front of people. This is the framework of the 7 universal rules for making money. This is where I got it all. So today's episode, you're gonna wanna listen to this multiple times. Tag a friend, share it with a friend. It would mean the world to me if we could get this episode out there because more women deserve more resources. And these are all of the things that I was told early on, they didn't sink in. 7 years into this business, I can say without a shadow of a doubt, they are the core principles that I go back to on the daily to align my actions with the highest return possible. So with that, I'm so excited. Let's get into the 7 rules for earning money. These are the cheat codes to building real wealth. Rule number 1, money follows value, not effort. We are in a busyness epidemic. Busyness is not going to create money, but working hard strategically and creating value will. Let me give you an example to set the stage for this. You want to start a business. You value friendship. So you decide you're going to go create friendship bracelets and post them on Etsy for sale. You're going to go post them on Etsy for sale where there's thousands of other friendship bracelets available, where you don't have an audience already built. There's nothing completely unique about your friendship bracelets, but you go and you spend all this time and you create these bracelets and you post them on Etsy and then you don't make a sale. That is not going to make you money. However, if friendship is important to you, it's something that you value, and through the course of observation or interviewing people or talking to people, you notice that there are a lot of lonely 30-something women, and you start to provide a service that teaches women how to make friends, how to be a better friend, how to maintain enriching relationships, and you provide a lot of value to those particular lonely women, and you help them create meaningful relationships because that's something that they want. That is something that creates a ton of value that you will be compensated for. Similarly, if you're in corporate, if you love facilitating team events and you're always hosting happy hours and you're getting people together and you're like, the softball team is great, you might volunteer to be the team coordinator and you might just be spending money for the business so that you guys can have a softball team and drink a lot of beers after, and it doesn't really do anything productive. But if you facilitate team events and connectivity that has a KPI tied to it, like most companies do a quarterly impact check-in when do a survey for the employees, and what if you made sure that your events were tied to increasing job satisfaction metrics on the survey, or you could prove that you were creating a better working environment and therefore reducing turnover, which saves the business more money so they don't have to hire new talent. Those things matter. That measurement has value. Value is solving a real problem that somebody cares about, not a problem you wish they cared about, not a problem that feels meaningful to you, but a real present need. Friendship bracelets, nobody has demand for friendship bracelets unless Taylor Swift endorses your brand of arts and crafts and she's like, you have to go buy from this Etsy seller. You don't have any value in the marketplace. Are you going to hinge your entire business strategy on hoping that Taylor Swift notices you? Not the best approach. However, if you can directly impact women by helping them find new friends in the area that you just moved to, that has value. You want to play softball? Good for you. It doesn't mean anything unless you're doing it for your business. And because of your efforts, it's impacting your business in a meaningful way that they care about. And what do all businesses care about? Staying profitable, keeping costs low, retaining the best talent. Those are the things that you need to align with in order to make money. Because rule number 1, I'll say it again, money follows value, not effort. And I can imagine what it's like herding cats, trying to get everybody to get together at your workplace for a ping pong tournament. But who cares if it doesn't have any value? Now, this is so interesting because over the years, people have come to me to pick my brain and ask me for business advice and coaching. And that's something that I do within AF Marketing. I also offer office hours for people who have business ideas. There's a link, I'll put the link in the show notes if that's something that you're interested in, where we can schedule time and you can come and get my business advice, or we can talk about marketing plans or whatever it might be. And this is where I tend to offend a lot of people, because people will come to me with their idea and I will punch holes in it all day long. Because what matters to you may not be verified by the market. There might not be clear value. If you don't have a clear value proposition and you can't explain it to me or if you're in an organization to your boss or to an investor, then you don't have a successful business model yet. And that's what I help people work through. But people are they're holding on so tight to their ideas and what's important to them that it's really hard to release that and say, what's important to people outside of me? What's important to my market? Because money follows value, not how hard you worked, not how long it took you to put your website together, not how much you care about this. Money follows where you can add value and exchange that value for money. Okay? Wealth comes from creating value, not just working hard. Paul Graham is the person that really nailed this into my head. Paul Graham is one of the founders of Y Combinator, and he draws such a clean distinction between getting money and creating wealth. And he argues that the durable path is being paid for value that you create. You can get money by doing a job, 100%. Go in, do your job description, clock out, don't care. All you need to be is a producer. There's roles for that at nearly every organization. But if you want to create wealth, aka value, you need to create the value. Also, Naval Ravikant on his How to Get Rich, very famous podcast, I listen to it once a year, and you should too. I'll talk about it later. It frames the way to get wealthy as the result of creating things that society wants at scale, not chasing status, okay? So in the corporate world, a lot of this status that we see is chasing titles and income and all the things. But the reality is the corporate world, when people are evaluating if they want to promote you or not, they're going to promote people who increase revenue, save time, make leadership's life easier or reduce risk, or they are so good at their job that they can expand their scope of work and they can do more with the same amount of time that everybody else has. Being good at your job is just table stakes. Like, that's the bottom line. But if you want to grow in your corporate role or your small business company that you work for, you have to be useful to the decision makers. You have to be useful to the company at large. Being a producer and a doer is great, but it's not going to build your wealth. You are not going to be put up for promotions. You're not going to be considered to grow. I've had so many interesting dynamics with people in running my business because I am such a growth-oriented person. I'm always like, what's next? Where can we go? How can we expand? How can I expand? How can I grow? And there have been times where I have told people like, you are doing a fantastic job. Like, you are exceeding your expectations. I would love to help you grow in this role. I would love to help you grow with AF marketing. Here's what's next for you. And they full on reject it because they say, oh, I don't want to do more work. And it's like, okay, that's a totally baffling to me, but that's fine. I've had crazy experiences with people's attitudes completely changing towards me after I've offered to promote them and given them a promotion or offered them the promotion and they reject it because they don't want to do more than they're doing. That's just not my mindset. So it's very hard for me to understand that, but that's the way that some people work. And it's not just about, I want to say this really quickly. It's not just about getting more responsibility and more money. It's like, you are talented. I would want an intrinsically motivated person to be like, yes, I can do more. I want to learn more. I want to grow and therefore do more, learn new skills or whatever. This is going to come back up again in another rule. But they think they should just be compensated more for doing the bare minimum. And that's not how business owners think. Business owners will reward, and my mentor says to me, we can never overcompensate a stellar employee. And I have a small business system where if somebody is a freaking rock star with me, they're riding the rocket ship all the way to the top. They're getting bonused out on all of the revenue impact that they make. But if there is no revenue impact, if they don't bring any new business into the company and I'm the one that's doing that, why would I reward them for growth when they haven't done anything to contribute to it? You need to think about that. And it's one of the reasons why at my last corporate job, I grew so quickly, so fast. I started with the title marketing girl. My desk was 4 cinder blocks with a piece of plywood over the top. And I came in every single day and I didn't know shit about what we were doing. I was doing pro formas. I was learning them on the side. I was acquiring property for the company and phasing out how we could sell that property for more money. I was creating material impact every single day at that job, hiring more marketing teams, making our salespeople's jobs easier, ensuring that we weren't wasting money with leads that weren't getting followed up, by getting us more pre-sales and managing the marketing, doing all of the things that were going to help the company sell properties faster. That's why I got promoted over and over and over again, because everything that I did was tied back to value for the company, helping us sell better, sell faster, sell stronger, market better, market stronger, all the things. In corporate world, you have to be good at your job and be useful to the bigger picture. So if you think you're just going to go in, clock out and do your job, and that's my job description, I'm not going to do anymore, that's totally fine. But just know that the people that are running the ship are not likely to put your name up for promotion. And by the way, if you're working from home and you're taking advantage, or you're just doing the bare minimum, or you're taking longer to finish your job, your leadership notices that. People know your vibes, okay? We know what an A player looks like. And a B player, the A players don't want the B players on the team, okay? The A players are all A players. I hire A players at AF Marketing. And for me, it's so important to make sure that that culture is protected. That's the way that you need to think about your role in your organization. What type of player are you? How would your boss rate you, A, B, or C? This is not about what's fair. This is not about the fact that you also have other responsibilities outside of work. The framework of what the conversation is today is, do you want to make more money? Do you want to earn more money? That's the corporate lens. Okay, I'm just being really honest about it. Now, let's talk about being a freelancer or a business owner. This is where product market fit is everything. If clients are saying, oh, this is nice, instead of I need this, you do not have leverage. We're going to talk more about leverage later, but quickly on this, let's say, for example, okay, here's an example. I need my nails done so bad. Let's say you are the best, most talented nail artist in all of San Diego County. People are driving from all over to get to you because you do the best illustrations of God knows what, the Grinch at Christmas on people's nails, and they go super viral for having them on their page or whatever. That is leverage. That is something where there is a very distinct market who wants the Grinch on their fingernails at Christmas, or a little Cupid on Valentine's Day, or whatever it is. You have a demand of people who want your skill set because it's important to them. Versus, are you a manicurist who refuses to do gel, doesn't do extensions, doesn't do any artwork, and only does a manicure with OPI polish that's going to flake off after a day? You do not have leverage. So therefore, you do not have the ability to charge more for your time or your services because they're not in demand. Nobody wants an OPI Linkin Park After Dark that chips off in 42 seconds after you walk out the door. Nobody wants that. It's not where the market is now. So if you want to create more money for yourself, you have to give people what they value. Now, does the manicure take about as much time as a gel manicure? Yeah. But it's not about effort. It's not about your time. It's about your value. Again, if your clients are saying, this is nice, instead of I need this from this person, you do not have the leverage that really demonstrates value. If I could just sum up this whole rule, rule number one, money follows a value, not effort. It would be that effort is private. Effort is private and value is visible. Wealth comes from creating value, not just working hard. You could be busy and spin your wheels and revise your logo 42,000 times. Nobody cares. That doesn't mean that your business or your service is worth anymore. The value has to be visible to the people that you're going to sell to, whether that's your boss at a corporate job or a consumer or another business. And if I was going to give you a homework assignment, because 2026 is the year of taking action. We are in the year of the horse. We are moving forward. So I'm going to give you one thing to do for each of these rules, okay? If you're going to do one thing this week that aligns with money follows value, not effort, I want you to write down exactly whose problem you solve and why it matters to them. And again, this could be if you are a freelancer, if you are a business owner, or you work at a business, whose problem are you solving and why does it matter to them? this could be a customer focus. If you work in a corporation, for example, maybe you are customer service, maybe you work in property management and you make sure that more people renew because the way that you run your property is better than the place next door. And you make sure people are aware of that. Or maybe you are in asset management and you make sure that your assets are managed properly and they're all performing and giving a return to your company. Whatever it is, write it down. And then that is your focus for 2026 if you want to earn more money. Okay, rule number two. This goes hand in hand. All of these rules are related, but it is very different from rule number one, but there's a lot of overlap. You'll see all of these examples that I have tie together. Rule number two is that demand decides your ceiling. Demand decides your ceiling because money doesn't respond to potential. It responds to demand. Because people don't get rich just because they're talented. People who are talented get rich because there is a demand for their talent. Talent does not determine earnings. Demand from the market does. And again, we're going to extrapolate this into if you're an entrepreneur, if you work in a corporation, whatever. But let me give you a real world example to make this point painfully obvious, okay? Person A is an incredibly talented classical pianist. They have been playing for 15 years. They are the next coming of Mozart. They are technically elite. They play beautifully. They perform beautifully. And they perform at recitals and weddings and they teach lessons. Now, even if this person makes it big, they become very popular. The demand in the world for classical pianists and new classical piano is probably smaller than the demand for new country music or pop or any other genre of music that's out there. I wouldn't say that 2026 people are eating up classical piano on Spotify. Like, I don't see that in anybody's Spotify Wrapped. I think we could agree, right? So even if this person makes it absolutely to the top of their game, there just isn't the type of demand where people are going to want to continuously pay over and over and over again for a classical pianist, whether it's through buying their songs or seeing them in concert, versus person B is the most incredibly talented, amazing DJ. They have trained for 15 years. They are technically elite. They have the most incredible music. It's an EDM. They perform and put on the best shows. They are absolutely epic on stage. They start by posting their DJing skills on TikTok, and then they get some local gigs in their community, and then they get to go to open for Kygo, and then they get a residency at Encore Beach Club in Las Vegas. There is a huge market for incredibly talented DJs because people will go and travel all over the world to follow their favorite DJs. I've done this. I've gone to Europe to see my favorite DJs play. And people are continually going back to the same places to see their same performers over and over again. There is a huge market of 20, 30, and 40-something-year-olds who loves electronic music more so than classical piano, more than likely. I mean, I'm a case study in this. I've gone to see the Chainsmokers at Encore Beach Club like 42 times just because it's a good time. There is more demand for an electronic music DJ artist that is relevant to culture at large. And dollar for dollar, they may be equally talented to this classical pianist. The pianist maybe even is more talented because it's more technical. I don't really know anything about being a DJ, but as a child who spent nearly 15 years in piano lessons and hated every moment of it, I can see that there's some technical situations there. They could have the same amount of training. They could be technically elite. They could have the same value of stage presence. But overall, there's more demand for a DJ in today's society than a pianist. It's not 1774 anymore, and the market has shifted. So they might have the same amount of talent, but there's more demand for the DJ. Therefore, the DJ, over the course of their career, will demand more money, because there's more of a market. People will travel to their shows, go to their concerts, see them in residency, buy their merch and their music, and they'll follow them on TikTok, and therefore this person's going to have a larger audience, so they have more brand deals, all the things. They are going to have more opportunities. They might be the next Kygo starting Palm Tree Club, which is an entertainment venue and tour and investment company. The opportunities here are endless because the ceiling is very high. The demand is very high. Therefore, the earning potential matches it. Talent is potential, but demand is income. Let's talk about this in a corporate example, okay? In corporate, high earners are the ones that are going to sit close to and influence things like revenue, strategy, risk, power, how much money goes in, how much money goes out. The people who make the most important decisions are the ones that are sitting close to revenue, strategy, risk, power, money, like the CEO, the COO, the CFO, the marketing strategist. All these people have roles that are tied to outcomes that are important for the company. If your role is not tied to outcomes, income growth is capped. This is a hard pill to swallow for producers, because if you are a producer, if you are just doing the job, you are more of the cog in the machine than you are somebody who is influencing revenue, strategy, risk, and power. That's why people in sales positions get so well compensated in commission, because they're helping the company grow. But if you're the person that's doing the service, like you're the mechanic in the auto shop, you, the mechanic, you are a cost. The market determines how much you get paid. Mechanics are doing a service to maintenance the cars that are sold. Let's break this out into like a dealership scenario, okay? You're the mechanic. You might be the best mechanic in the shop, so you get, you know, promoted to leadership within your service bay, and maybe you do upsell and do a really good job. Okay, so you're compensated well there. But the person that's gonna make more than the mechanic is the salesperson. Because if the salesperson's out there on the car lot and they're slinging cars all day long, they're gonna be making a lot of commission, because overall, the dealership needs sales to happen to be successful. If you're the sales manager and you're helping and coaching your salespeople to be successful on the sales floor, you'll make more money than them. And then you have the person that's running the whole thing. So they're overseeing all of the different departments of sales, of maintenance, of operational cost, of where to buy land to build our next car dealership so that we can expand and have even more cars and hire more salespeople and more mechanics so that our dealership can grow. That person's going to be even more well compensated. So like I talked about in the last rule, doing your job description is fine. But while you might get promoted here and there within the framework of what you're doing if you're a producer, you have to get closer to the things that matter, like revenue or costs or power or expansion. And if you are a producer, it's likely that you can be replaced with another producer. And the way that the business looks at you is a cost of goods sold, or cost of service, basically, because you need to do the work to service the things that have been sold. Whether you're a social media manager or you're a teller at a bank, you don't have a lot of leverage. You don't have the specific skills that help you get closer to the things that matter to the business. Again, it's not about what matters to you, it's about what matters to the business. So Cal Newport, who is a career theorist and author, he has this idea of career capital, which is basically, if you're in a larger organization, build rare and valuable skills and then cash them in for better roles, more autonomy, higher compensation. All of these rare and valuable skills strengthen your corporate lane, meaning that promotion and raises are things that you can achieve. Let's lock this in with an example. Like, what if you work in finance and you're an analyst? You're kind of a producer, right? Well, if you're an analyst and you build your skills to become exceptionally good at turning really messy, nasty data into really clear executive insights that make your boss's job easier, or you learn fantastic persuasive communication skills. So when you present to investors, they're always able to get the information clearly that they need from you, or you learn exactly what they care about and give them the information they need to make decisions, and there's less friction for them to work with you. You might get pulled into higher level meetings. You might be called upon for insights on what strategy to proceed with. And from there, you become more valuable. You have skills that your counterparts don't have. That's a rare and valuable skill. And with that, you can negotiate higher pay, more flexibility, or you can leave and get hired elsewhere quickly because you've built all of these skills at this job. Your skills are rare and valuable and hard to replace compared to your competitors. Therefore, there's more upside. This has nothing to do with her talent alone or her passion or being good at her job. It's about aligning what she's building in a skill set to what the market needs, which is in this case, her bosses, her investors, et cetera. It's skills that are tied to outcomes. It's easier to work with her. She gives us better insights and strategy that's proved to work. She has taken her talent and matched it with demand. Remember, rule number two, demand decides your ceiling, not your talent, not how hard you work. It's about aligning your talents with what the market needs. Now, let's talk about this in the freelance world or small business world. If you are a graphic designer, if you're a freelance graphic designer and you start out building brands for people, and then you move into websites. Like, you can build a website. That's fantastic. Your work looks like everybody else's work, and there's a lot of people out there. It's like, why are people going to pay you more to do their landing page? Well, instead of chasing more clients, you could build rare and valuable skills in specializing in conversion-focused landing pages or designing things that are going to directly impact sales. And you can show a case study of before I worked with this person, this was their revenue. After I implemented this landing page or design style or whatever, it impacted their revenue directly. Now you're not a designer. Now you're somebody who makes companies more money. And when you focus on that rare and valuable skill of making small businesses, helping small businesses make more money, helping more sales convert or doing marketing that brings more leads to the business or taking a weight off of a business owner's shoulders, your demand will go up because when people learn what you do, they'll say, I want that for my business too. And then you can increase your rates. And then you can stop negotiating with clients. And then your income scales. That, my friend, is creating rare and valuable skills that you can cash in on. If you're in business, ask yourself, what are people already paying for? What are they complaining about? What feels urgent, not aspirational? Because sophisticated business builders are following demand first. It's not about what you want to do. It's about what the market needs you to do. And again, as I said earlier in this segment, when I'm coaching people and they come to me with a business idea and I blow holes in it, it's not because I think your idea is bad. It's because a lot of people think of egocentric businesses. Like, if you are so passionate about, I don't know, aesthetics, and you want to be a nurse practitioner and start your own business, and your aesthetic and the way that you think everybody looks good is with big ass fluffy lips that look like 2016 Kylie Jenner craziness, that's your taste. That's not what the market is demanding. People want more natural results now. So you need to develop your skills for facial balance and harmony and natural looking results, not things that are obviously injected. Do you see what I'm saying here? So the takeaway is listening to what matters and building skills in that direction, because demand is going to decide how much money you can earn, not what you care about. So if you were going to do one homework assignment this week, I would say, identify where demand already exists. Like, what are your bosses saying they're stressed about? What are your customers saying is keeping them up at night? And then from there, you brainstorm a list of how you can fill that gap. Now, here's the cheat code. If you work in corporate, it's about to be pref time. It's coming up probably for everybody at the end of Q1 of doing reviews and all that type of stuff. If you proactively go to your leadership and say, what matters to you in the business and how can I add more value so that I can grow within the company, they will probably be so impressed, first of all. And they'll probably say, we need more sales, or I need this turnover to be lower, or we need to increase margins here, or, you know, take the amount of time it takes to create this project down, whatever it might be. And then you focus on that and execute on what's important to the leadership. They will see you. And you have to go back, by the way, and we'll talk about this in just a second. You have to show them that you're contributing to that But if you do that for your customers and you say, hey, what's really on your mind for 2026? And this is why I go to conferences, by the way. It's because I want to understand what's happening at large. And so I know that in 2026 in real estate development, the cost of getting projects off the ground and the challenges around that are very high. So a lot of real estate developers are looking to rebrand or take care of assets that they already own instead of building new ones. So what am I doing? I'm coming out with a ton of educational content on that for our business, for our customers this year, and I'm offering a new service around rebranding an existing community in a way that's going to help our customers increase rents, have higher resident retention and renewals, to clean up reputation issues so that we don't lose on new prospects. All those things, like that is the demand that is needed from my customer. Therefore, I meet the demand and I can charge a premium for it early when nobody else is doing this yet in my market. To recap, rule number two, demand decides your earning ceiling. The market sets your income, not your talent, not your potential, not what you care about. You've got to align your skills with what your market cares about. I'm freaking out. We're already at 45 minutes. This is gonna have to be a two-parter because we've got 7 rules to get through and I'm only on rule number 3. So we'll finish up rule number 3 in this episode and then we'll go to 4 through 7 in the next episode. So quick pause for just, I don't even wanna call it a plug. Like if this is resonating with you, if you are taking notes on this episode, if you are building something, I want to hear from you. I want to shout you out. I want to know what's going on in your life. So send me an email, oldmoneypodcast@gmail.com. Send me a DM on social. I respond to every single one. If this is resonating with you and you haven't done it yet, I would be so honored if you leave a review, share this with a friend. We want to grow this podcast in 2026 and you are a really big part of that. So if you feel so inclined, I'd be forever grateful. Let's get into rule number 3. You're not going to want to skip this one. Before I tell you what it is, and I've talked about this on the podcast before, a story for you. My dad was helping me with some early coaching when I had just really started bringing team on board. And I was having a really hard time with my team not asking for what they wanted from our vendors and just accepting work that was not up to our standards. And I was like, what is going on here? Like, why can't they just say, hey, can you give me a revision on this? It's not bad to give feedback, especially when we're doing work as a team and I need one more revision or you spelled this word wrong, but they were so afraid to ask for that. My dad said, well, you know, you just gotta tell them that if they were gonna go to the mechanic with their car and they brought it in for an oil change and they changed the tires, they would just say, hey, like I brought this for an oil change and you changed my tires, so like fix it. And I brought this up to the team and all the team, all Gen Z, I was like, what would you guys do? You would say something, right? And they were all like, no, literally I would just take it and go figure it out somewhere else. I'm like, wait a minute. You don't need tires, but you take your car to a shop and they give you tires and you're just gonna take the tires and pay for them? And they're like, yeah. And I'm like, well, what if you go to a restaurant and you order a dish and then they bring you the wrong dish? You're just going to eat the dish? And they're like, yeah, I'm not going to send it back. Now, this is not hating on these. And I can think of the 3 girls. I remember exactly where we were when we had this conversation in a tiny little office where the 4 of us worked. And this is not hating on them at all. This is not hating on them at all. These are very smart girls, by the way. Only hired very, very smart people to work for me. Always do. These were brilliant, lovely, thoughtful, wonderful girls. And maybe it's that they weren't taught this skill, or maybe it's that they didn't want to be a bother. But the reality is that that is a skill that is a muscle that can be built over time. And I think there's been such a backlash of Karens in this country that everybody is afraid to offend somebody else or give them feedback or do something that might ruffle somebody's feathers. And while that conscientiousness is nice and we don't want to be Karens, you don't have to be a Karen to advocate for yourself. There is a fine line. But you must learn how to advocate for yourself in order to grow in this world, especially with your income. And advocating for yourself is not just about not taking the tires and getting your oil changed and if there's a mistake, there might be ownership on both sides. I wasn't clear in my order. You took the notes down wrong, whatever it is. Or same thing with ordering the dish. Maybe you didn't hear me. Maybe it's loud in the restaurant. I'm so sorry. But we are going to advocate for what it is we want and what it is we need. Whether that's in a relationship with your partner or with your boss or with a client, we're going to advocate for ourselves. You've heard me say this quote before, but it's so important. I'll say it again. Tim Ferriss says that your success in life will be directly correlated with how many uncomfortable conversations you're willing to have. Yes, it is uncomfortable to have a conversation with somebody that you're dating early on and be like, hey, this does or does not work for me in a relationship, or what are your intentions for a relationship? That is an uncomfortable conversation to have, but not having it takes you down the path of not going where you want to go. It's very uncomfortable to go pitch yourself for a role in your company that doesn't exist yet. You're putting yourself out there. You could get rejected. It's scary. But not pitching yourself means that you stay where you are. Not going on dates means that you continue to be single. Not asking for the sale means that you don't have the income. All of these things are uncomfortable. All of these things require a new set of skills. It requires you to advocate for yourself. It requires you to communicate. It requires you to continue the path in the face of discomfort. And that is why rule number three is discomfort is the price of income growth. Every income jump requires a new level of discomfort, and there is no exception. In the zeitgeist, in culture, what I'm seeing a lot of, which is scary to me, is that people want more money without selling, without asking, without pitching, without being visible, without ever being rejected or hearing no, without letting go of what feels safe. They want to be handed more money. They think somebody else is responsible for making sure that they have housing and the life that they want. And they think somebody else, like the government or their parents, is responsible for making sure that they continue to grow in their life. They're looking for their bosses to recognize them, say, you are the one, you've been chosen, here's your next role. They are looking to go to a coffee shop and be discovered like Cindy Crawford and be the next it girl in culture or the movies or whatever, but they're not going to do anything about it. Advocating for yourself, putting yourself out there, asking for what you want, making something and sharing it with people is uncomfortable. Being a business owner and hiring people, saying no to people, firing people, turning clients away, making risky decisions, making huge investments, it's very uncomfortable for me all the time. But getting past the discomfort is where the income growth lives. If you stay comfortable, you will plateau. Plain and simple, you will not grow. When you're comfortable, you will not grow. Like, let's talk about this in the corporate sense. If you want to apply for a role, I understand that applying for a new job feels like a part-time job. It is. It's a lot of work to find the right, next, best, aligned role, researching, networking, applying, writing cover letters, preparing for interviews, doing all the things. You're like, I don't have time. You're right. You don't. You have to create the time. It's uncomfortable. Applying for roles that you're not 100% qualified for, leaving a comfortable team where you know everybody, you know the process, and then going into something to learn new culture and new leadership and new priorities and new skills, it's uncomfortable. Having conversations with leadership saying, here's like, or tell me, like we just talked about, tell me what's important to you, and then going to deliver on it and then coming back in 3 months and saying, hey, 3 months ago, you told me it was really important to increase renewals in our business. And here's all the renewals that I have saved that we're going to cancel and the revenue impact of that. Asking, doing the work, putting yourself out there to save the renewals, then going back and reporting so people are aware and your work is visible, it's uncomfortable. Or having a conversation about compensation and then getting feedback that there isn't anywhere for you to grow, or you need to build other skills, and then you have to go build those skills, and you're like, well, I'm not getting paid to do it. I get it. It's uncomfortable. Getting feedback is uncomfortable. But these are all of the things that push you forward. If you own your own business, you're a freelancer, raising your prices is uncomfortable. Pitching before you feel ready is so uncomfortable. Niching down or niching down, however you want to say that. Letting some people go because they don't fit your business model anymore. It feels like you're losing revenue and it's uncomfortable. or selling without apologizing for it. It's uncomfortable. How can you get comfortable with discomfort? It's a muscle that you build. You have to learn how to advocate for yourself, how to sell without it feeling sticky or yucky, because these are all of the doors you have to walk through in order to grow your income. Everything that you want is on the other side of discomfort. I swear it. Even if you're overspending and you have to break the habit, you have to break the cycle, or you have to pay down debt, you might have a period of discomfort where you're not able to lean into all of your desires and the dopamine hits of shopping online and buying things because you saw an influencer buy it. Or you might have to freeze your credit cards. And I mean that literally in the freezer. Go back and listen to my episodes about debt. You might have to significantly change your lifestyle. You might have to get a roommate. That's what I did for years to try to save money so that I could leave my job. I'm an only child. I'm hyper independent. Having a roommate was very uncomfortable for me. And it took me a lot of growth in order to learn how to respect somebody else coming into my home. Not like you live by my rules, but how can I accommodate this person? It's very uncomfortable, but it was necessary for me to get to the next level of my own financial growth. It was very important for me to leave my job because it helped me get to the next level of growth. I am right now recording this on a Sunday afternoon when the alternative would be I could be, I don't know, scrolling TikTok or doing whatever. After I finish recording this podcast episode, I'm getting ahead. I have about 6 hours of work ahead of me for AF marketing. And yeah, I had yesterday off and I went to drinks with my girlfriends and I hung out with Justin. And today Justin's doing his own thing and I'm here building my businesses. It's a trade-off. Is it uncomfortable? I mean, maybe, but you know, maybe past me would say I would rather be lounging. I deserve 2 days off a week. But I'm now energized by building my business. I am energized being here recording this podcast with you. I am the one that is advocating and taking the action that is not the easiest path. It's not the path of least resistance. I show up all the time. And that's what an old money woman does. Even being quietly confident, it still takes nerve. It still takes a lot for me to show up to a pitch, and I still get nervous when I meet new clients. It's always going to be a stretch, but I've built this muscle so much that the version of me 7 years ago that was barely pitching with like a crazy deck that was built on PowerPoint, and now what we're giving to our clients and presenting our work, it's two different people. And by the way, I'm not always working every single weekend, but I do know that at the end of the day, my success begins and ends with me. So right now we have a bunch of huge projects. I've taken on a ton of new work and I got to do it. It's not normally the role that I'm in. I'm normally in the CEO and the growth hat role. But right now I am taking extra time to put in extra work so that our projects and our clients are successful. And guess what? In me doing that, I'm directly compensated for it. Because I'm the one that's going out of my way to be a little uncomfortable on my Sunday afternoon. And I know that everything I put into my business comes back to me tenfold, not just in revenue, but in equity and the skills that I learn in doing the roles that are not really my role so I can create better systems for my team and all the things. Like, it's uncomfortable. Okay, big deal. It's a Sunday afternoon and I had a whole Saturday and I got all Sunday morning and I'll have Sunday night. And at the same time, this discomfort is not uncomfortable for me anymore. I think I'm illustrating that a lot of people would feel uncomfortable by saying they would have to give up nights and weekends to build their business, but that's what it takes. And then you get to a point where you have a team that's running it for you. Ask culture matters. Negotiation, pitching, advocating for yourself, those are wealth skills. Advocating for yourself, selling something is not about you getting one over on someone else, by the way. It's about finding a win-win solution. I hear from so many people that they don't like selling. But here's the thing. If you're following rule number one, which is that you are creating something of value, and number two, you're responding to the demand of your market and the things that they need, then it makes rule number three, which is discomfort is the price of income growth, a lot easier. Because if you're following rules one and two, then you're creating something of value and presenting it to a community that demands it of you. And therefore, selling is not about winning one over or taking advantage of somebody or getting money out of them. It's like, hey, you have this problem. I have the solution. Let me help you. And then depending on how important your problem is or their problem is and how great your solution is, the value, you get to charge more and more and more for it. So this discomfort goes down naturally if you're following the other rules. So if you're a person that is not strong in the muscle of advocating for yourself, asking for what you want, or having uncomfortable conversations, it's a muscle that you can build slowly. When your Starbucks drink gets made wrong, can you advocate kindly, not by being a nasty Karen, but saying, hey, I'm so sorry. I ordered a white hot chocolate and you gave me a regular hot chocolate. Would you mind correcting that for me? That's advocating for yourself. That's uncomfortable. Or if you make a mistake, taking ownership and accountability and apologizing for it, that's uncomfortable. That's a really important skill to learn. Taking ownership is so underrated. Oh my gosh. If you take your car to the mechanic and you asked for new oil, but they gave you new tires, you have got to learn to say, hey, I didn't need new tires. Can you put my old ones back on? And I'm not going to pay for that, but I do need an oil change. So please do what I asked of you. And obviously you're not going to say it that way, but it's about advocating for yourself. The biggest thing that I see that is an epidemic in our society today is people wanting more and they don't do anything to ask for it. They don't create any value in the market and they're not responding to demand. And then they're resentful and they complain. I could scream. So if I could give you one thing to do this week, one thing, it would be to call yourself out on the one conversation that you have been avoiding having. There's a conversation in your life that has just been, I got to talk to this person about this thing. I need to have this conversation. And you're putting it off. You're avoiding it because it's uncomfortable. And you're going to have the conversation. Go to ChatGPT. I want you to tease out both sides. You can figure out some scripts. You can practice in the mirror. When I used to be in sales, I used to practice my sales pitch in the car driving to work every single morning so that it wouldn't stumble out of my mouth and trip on my tongue. And I felt more confident in my pitch. You've got to practice having these conversations. They are uncomfortable. I get it. But this week, you are going to name the conversation you've been postponing and you're going to have the conversation. Quiet confidence still takes nerve. Every single level of your income growing is going to require a new level of you, and it's probably going to feel uncomfortable. And if you can get comfortable with being uncomfortable, you can be successful. You guys, I have so much more to share with you about this. Rule number one, money follows value, not effort. Rule number two, demand decides your income ceiling. Rule number three, discomfort is the price of income growth. On the next episode, we're gonna go through rules 4 through 7. You are not going to wanna miss the conversation. I will check in with you next week. We'll continue. Let me know what you think about this episode. If you are building something, I wanna hear from you. I wanna shout you out. Let me know what's on your mind. You know how to find me. It's all in the show notes. I love you so much, and I'll talk to you soon.